This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We are going to be interviewing Journal Sentinel reporter John Dietrich. We're working to get him onto the line so he can share with all of you his next installment in a series of investigative pieces that he's been doing that address gun violence in the state of Wisconsin. Cardi, John says he's here in the studio, but I have yet to see him. So if you can take a look and see if we've got him anywhere, hopefully we can. Okay, great. Thank you very much. We're working to get John here and talking with us. There he is joining us, I think, on the phones. We will be sure to get him. I interviewed John twice, I believe once in late 2023 and then again in 2024 for the first couple installments of his excellent work on these issues. And it's been quite shocking. And Tom is... You've joined me today as a co-host. One of the things that John's work has pointed out is the incidence of suicide that occur because of the gun issue and prevalence in the state of Wisconsin. And he's, again, turning now to accidental gun violence that involves children. John, thanks so much for making time. You are on the air. It's good to talk with you again. Tell us about your piece. There's so many angles in this article, John, that we can talk about.
So sorry for the technical issues. So this is year two. You mentioned a project that I started last year through the O'Brien Fellowship at Marquette University, Behind the Gun, where we really looked at gun deaths statewide in Wisconsin and looked at all of them. So not just homicides, but also suicides. And then saw how that hits counties upstate. What we are doing this year is looking at a much smaller category, but one that gets a lot of publicity, which is unintentional gun deaths. So those are 1% of the gun death total, but they're especially when they involve children, they get a lot of attention, and rightly so, children that get access to unsecured firearms and are hurt or killed. And so the gist of this project was to look at these, to try to understand how often they happen, if there are geographical differences. As I say in the article, they are rare, they are tragic, and they are highly preventable. And in that whole category, the other thing that we wanted to look at is where are they happening in the state of Wisconsin, and what happens in the system in response to when those happen.
Yes, it was quite an emotionally provoking article, John, because of, frankly, one, these are all preventable injuries and deaths. You put it succinctly, prevent access, prevent the shooting. And we've seen a spate of laws, both here in the state of Wisconsin, but in other states, that do punish the parents or guardians or the gun owners if they leave them loaded and unsecured and kids get their hands on them and a shooting occurs and an accidental injury. As a lawyer, John, I thought the portion of your article that was both concerning and confusing was the enormous discrepancies that we see in the historical record in the state of Wisconsin when it comes to charging decisions in these tragic circumstances. And there's a huge variation, is there not? John, tell us more about that.
There is. Well, first of all, the incidents happen more. So over 8 years, we located 190 incidents of these types of cases. Again, unintentional. So there's no intention. This isn't even a stray bullet case. Right. This is a discharge. And half of those happen in Milwaukee County. So we have a big population in Milwaukee County, but not half. So that's a disproportionate number of incidents that happen. Also, the prosecutions disproportionately happen in Milwaukee County. What happens in Milwaukee County that's very different from the rest of the state is that almost every one of the cases for the last 8 years charged in Milwaukee County are charged as a felony. And they're not charged under, there's actually a state law from 1991 that was created around this particular behavior, this criminal conduct, and it says that this conduct is a misdemeanor. However, prosecutors in the state in Milwaukee County, under the direction of Deputy District Attorney Matthew Torbenson, his view is that that is woefully inadequate and that this is felony conduct. And I spoke to Deputy District Attorney Torbenson at length, and his view is that I've seen the cases. These are horrific cases. These are preventable. We need to bring punishment. We need to bring deterrence. And in his view, we also need to bring prohibition so that a felony conviction would prohibit. But just to compare, I mean, we're talking about in Milwaukee County over the last 8 years. This is not hundreds of cases, but it's the majority, 54 cases, 52 of those are felonies. And those are cases that I profile some of them and highlight them in the piece today. Brianna Givens is one of them. In that case, what you look at is you look at the implications of what happens when somebody's charged with a felony. Now, outstate, far fewer cases. It doesn't happen as often outstate. And there are felonies that are charged outstate, but it's much more often misdemeanor charges. There are also, I should note, some cases outstate that I found where no charges were filed at all, against the parents.
And I, John, I can understand an assistant or deputy district attorney's frustration when you see the same tragedies repeating over and over and over again, and the desire to do something to help stem the tide. But if the presumption is that it's going to have a deterrent effect to charge the felonies, as an economist, not as a lawyer, but as an economist, my next question becomes, is there evidence supporting district attorney, assistant district attorney Torbenson's assertion that it has a deterrent effect when you're charging these felonies? Because unlike that lawyer, for the families, these are standalone events. These aren't a pattern in the family.
Right. These are one-off things that are not likely to repeat. And what you're hoping is that the fear that people have of going to prison or being in the judicial system in one sense is going to be greater than your concern for your child's safety. Right. So that's kind of what the heart of this this is. And there is these child access protection laws, CAP laws, or safe storage laws have been passing frequently, across the country. In 91, Wisconsin was kind of at the early adopter stage. But since then, the majority of states have them. And there's a lot of organizations, a number of them, and researchers that have advocated that these are effective. There is some research by Dr. Matthew Miller, and I spoke to Dr. Miller. He's at Northeastern and Harvard. And his team questions this. And his team found that there is not evidence looking at the data that these laws are effective in changing storage behavior. That number one, people don't know what laws there are in the state. And if they do, they're not storing differently because of this. And so there's like real question as to whether the laws themselves are likely to affect behavior. That's where, Torbenson was saying, he welcomed the article because the publicity, he wants more people to know about it. And, and his point was, I would be happy if I didn't have to prosecute any of these cases. In other words, there are preventative measures, but the idea that the law is going to prevent these is really being called into question in more recent research.
And you also point out that Attorney Torbenson had a pretty direct impact on a new law that was adopted in 2017, which has been purposed to prosecute these cases as felonies, which is you know, interesting. Like, he actually sort of had an advocacy role in how that new law was added, which now is being used for these felony prosecutions. And it goes without saying, and you make this point in your article, John, that, you know, folks in Milwaukee County, and the way that you look at how these same, the same sort of conduct is prosecuted very differently, ends up revealing a deep racial disparity across the state. What did Attorney Torbenson have to say about that?
Well, it's you're right on the change in the law. So, you know, rather than amend the current 1991 law, which is the Leave Store law, he, working with a colleague of his that he went to Marquette Law School with, that was at the Department of Justice, they amended the state's felony neglect law, and to make it, because it said at that time that there had to be intentionality. And he, you know, his point was that's not really logical. Neglect isn't intentional. It should be unintentional. And so that law is also used for things like parents who neglect to feed their children or provide medical care or have them living in squalor, those kinds of conditions. And so the theory, the even though it doesn't, or leave like dangerous drugs like fentanyl around, those kinds of things, it doesn't mention firearms, but that's how that law has been used. But in terms of the racial dynamic, I mean, talking to Torbenson, his point was, and again, he doesn't prosecute all these, but people under his supervision, he either doesn't personally or people under his supervision. And, you know, his point was, yes, and he said those numbers don't surprise me of, you know, 65 cases, the vast majority are African-American. There's some Hispanic and one or two white defendants in there. Now, his point was, and I should also note, there aren't like several cases of white defendants where he no processed or something like that. There isn't that sort of, and he would say, I can only
within Milwaukee County, right? He's been approaching them consistently within the county. Yep, heard.
Within Milwaukee. And he says, I can't speak it to what happens outside of Milwaukee County. I'm not out there, but you know, this is the way I see this conduct in here. And he makes a very impassioned, I think, argument in this article. If people feel when they read this, you know, conflicted, you know, my editor, Greg Borowski, that was very conscious of us not to sort of provide tidy answers, but to say we should all grapple with this because this is not an easy issue. I think there's some impact that people might not appreciate, and that's what I wanted to highlight. But, you know, from Torbenson's point of view, you know, he grew up in the city, you know, he feels very, and he's like, I need to advocate for these children. His point was, when I mentioned the disparity racially, he said, all my victims are African-American. They're African-American children. And who is standing up for them and the family members, not just the parents who were responsible? What about the grandparents or maybe a parent that wasn't living in the home or, you know, other individuals? And it's my responsibility to speak up for those victims who.
We're with John Dietrich, Journal Sentinel reporter. We got to take care of some quick business. We're going to talk about the intersection of people trying to protect their kids from these.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're joined this half hour by John Dietrich, an investigative reporter with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Over the course of 2 years, he's been doing research and investigations into gun-related violence here in the state of Wisconsin. His most recent piece, titled Her son shot himself by accident with her gun. Should she be charged with a felony in Wisconsin? It depends. Came out just this morning. You can find it at www.jsonline.com. Thanks for making time, John, and thank you for your excellent work over the course of these, I think, nearly now 2+ years. There is this very interesting sort of recitation of facts towards the end of your article where you describe the gun safety trainings that are offered for gun owners. And one of the people that gives these trainings frequently was at one of them. You were there, and he stood up and said, "The Wisconsin Department of Justice recommends that you keep your firearm unloaded and locked in a safe, separated from the ammunition." And he was doing this in the city of Milwaukee, and the people in the room literally laughed at him. And the thing I want to ask you about is, again, we've been talking about the racial disparities that occur because in Milwaukee County, when kids are accidentally shot by a firearm and hurt or killed, these incidents get charged as felonies. And in other counties in the state, they don't. They're charged as misdemeanors. And that's got a disparate impact that you can see on a racial basis. And the fact of the matter is, a lot of people in Milwaukee County that have guns in their home have them for personal safety, and they laugh when they're told to put their guns in a safe because that's not giving them the feeling, the perception of being safe in the home. They own them to defend themselves, and they can't defend themselves with the gun that they bought for that express purpose if it's locked up in a safe. So there's this moment, there's this tension, right, between a parent who in good faith, because of the experiences or incidents of violence in their own life, active maybe threats against them, have a loaded gun in their home, and they have it because they want to protect their kids, and an accident like this occurs. John, can you help us? Am I getting this right, that there's this tension there? Like, these aren't people trying to do badly by their kids. They're trying to protect their families.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And I appreciate that. That was a scene that really stopped me. And, you know, it was kind of a funny moment, but it was a really serious moment, too, because what I understood then is that if you miss the reason that somebody has a firearm, you're not going to understand how to prevent this. So coming at somebody to offer something like, "Hey, the safest house is the house with no gun," or "just get rid of your gun," or "keep your gun unloaded and separated from the ammunition." Those are all true and accurate statements to prevent accidents and theft and things like that. But what that misses is kind of the world that people are living in. And what is that you're exactly right, that the firearms of people I'm talking to, it's because of, you know, the fear or perceived fear in a neighborhood. Some people have articulable, risk from batterers in their life and domestic violence cases. You know, it just strikes, again, it's one of these things where, you know, you sort of hear this blanket statement that says, a gun brought into the house for self or home protection is more likely to be used against you. And that is statistically true. However, risk is not evenly distributed. And
correct.
So there are, and because of circumstances and geography and what's going on, there is, further risk. Now, I think the big issue that when I would talk to individuals was that, and in that particular class, the unloaded and separated from ammunition was the bigger issue than kept in a safe. Because as I talk to people, and I've been to several of these classes, the idea of a safe is well received. And so it's not as if the only options are on the nightstand loaded or under a mattress, or unloaded and separated from the ammunition and so forth. There is another way, and it's safe, so it's biometric safe. There's a way to keep a firearm quickly accessible and unavailable to anybody who's not authorized to have it. So the
biometric safe, as you mentioned, John. Yes.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right. And there's other kinds of safes, too, that don't use electronics, but the biometrics have really come a long way. I talked to this guy, Timmy O., who invented this VeriSafe, and there's a lot of them out there right now. But I think it's really important to understand when you're thinking in, like, what are people actually using it for? Because I went through and coded all these cases from across the state. Almost all these guns are self-defense guns, at least if it was articulated in the criminal complaint.
That's such the point, John. It is a person who lives in extraordinary privilege to say, "Hey, don't worry about that. Don't own a gun. Keep it in a safe." Like, you probably haven't ever actually had to live in fear. And that's the point. John, where do you come down on this from your vantage point? I tend to think we need to look at this as not a one-size-fits-all charging decision, especially because we're seeing these disparities across the state. Makes me uncomfortable.
I think the messaging that you raise is interesting. As I talk to researchers about the impacts of these cases, I think one of the things that came when I talked to Dr. Miller and others is that the feeling that these laws may be having unintended expectation, and it also are coming from individuals who are maybe living in the suburbs and where they are fortunate to have well-policed areas where they don't have situations that are going on from some position of privilege in this case. And so, and again, it's not about shaming people either way. It's about trying to understand the circumstances. And like you say, one size fits all. But the other thing to keep in mind,
John, I'm sorry, we're going to have to leave it there. Running out of time. Thank you so much, folks. That's John Dietrich, investigative reporter for the Journal Sentinel. John, I'll reach out. I'd like to have you come back on and to continue this discussion, as well as discuss some of your prior work in this area. Really excellent job, John. Appreciate your time. Folks, we're going to come back with Tom Paulsowitz. Tom and I are going to dive right back into that Dennis Snakes, the old Biden pardon of his son, Hunter. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Join our conversation right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked, y'all.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
Well, welcome back, everybody. Welcome. If you're just joining us, my name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We've been talking with Journal Sentinel reporter John Dietrich about accidental gun shootings and injuries that involve kids here in Wisconsin and how they are charged as crimes. And in Milwaukee County, mostly charged as felonies, which can have absolutely devastating impacts. Most people, most families in which this occurs, the adults that own the firearms have no criminal record. And being charged with a felony can result in job loss, incarceration, challenges renting, all sorts of things, major cascading impacts. And the same conduct is charged very differently depending on where you live in the state. John, before we had to go to break, you wanted to make an additional point, sir. Please go ahead.
Well, it's just amplifying what you just said right now, that there are real people who are affected by this. And I delve into the case of Breonna Givens. And just briefly, like her story, again, when you just read the short criminal complaint, you might come to some conclusions. Her son shot himself in the hand with a loaded firearm that was left in a mattress, in her bedroom. And she was asleep on muscle relaxants. That's kind of what we know. But the rest of the story, her case, she had been threatened. She had a gun put to her head just a month or so before this happened. And no one was charged in that case. And so she bought a gun to protect herself and her three children. And it is true she was on a muscle relaxant. And that's because she was a nurse working in the pandemic. And she, had sciatica. So there was more to this case. And when she was charged, so she was charged with a felony. No criminal record, anything like that. And while in the end she ended up pleading to something less, because she was a nurse, she lost her job, and she can't get a job because she pled to a neglect count. She had Child Protective Services come to her house after this. She became homeless for a while after she was evicted. You know, and today she can't work in healthcare, which is her chosen field, and she's back to working a job that she worked as a teenager. And so I just feel like as you wrote through this, and I should also say she does not, she definitely admits she made a mistake, huge mistake. She would use a gun safe today. She doesn't have a gun today. She's not backing away from that. But I think it's just helpful for people to understand the real world implications of what being charged with a felony, even if you're not convicted of it in the end. You know, just to bring that out, I think was really important in the piece.
Folks, that's Journal Sentinel reporter John Dietrich. Again, John, thank you so much for your time. I have already emailed you to set up another longer interview so we can talk about some of your prior work. You have a good holiday season. We'll get you back on the air real soon. I appreciate you. And thanks for this coverage, John. Folks, we'll put the link to John's latest piece in the show notes today so that you can find it. But I promised you that Tom Paulswitz, my co-host for the day, and I would have a little tete-a-tete, if you will, about Joe Biden's pardon of his son, Hunter. To set it up, y'all, I think the pardon was a mistake. Tom thinks it was great. We discuss, we debate all of this coming up. You can join this great conversation, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. I covered it on Monday. I argued with Dom about it on Monday. Tom, give everybody your take.
Before I jump in on that, I just want to comment on the last segment. One article, fantastic article.
Yes.
You know, one of the things, though, after I read the article that struck me was there was not one mention of the product that killed the child.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you think about this in the United States, if there were other products that were killing children, they would
We'd
be pulled from the market
it.
Immediately.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and this can't be there aren't bad guns, there's bad people idea. It's impossible because these are children who don't know what they're doing. And it's just a dangerous product. And to me, where's the liability that these gun manufacturers have in this story, right? There are only two victims, and the victims are the child and the parent. And that to me is tragic. So I just want to make that statement because it just absolutely is mind-boggling to me that it's not even in the article.
Right.
It's not even brought up because we don't even bother to talk about it anymore.
Yeah, so just thoughts and prayers. Thoughts and prayers,
correct.
Well, and there's a through line just to set it up also for this discussion. The through line here and the reason that I thought this worked as let's talk about this and then we're going to talk about the pardon is that the biggest takeaway from that article is depending on where you live in the state of Wisconsin, you're going to be treated very differently for the exact same conduct.
Right.
And that to me, when we talk about the justice system, that is an indication when the system is broken, that the exact same conduct is charged and punished very, very differently. Now, there's always some discretion, some variables given the context of the particular action, but the gravity of the impact between a misdemeanor charge and a felony charge is enormous on someone's life. And it's interesting to me that this different rules for different people is sort of lurks at the root of the debate over Joe Biden's pardon of his son, Hunter. And I'll just say this to help set it up, and I'd love you to consider this in your explanation of your view, Tom. I've heard the response from a lot of people saying it's defensible because no one else except for Hunter Biden would have been subject to this sort of prosecution, that it's by virtue of the fact that he is the president's son and it was politicized. And my response to that is this. The law is the way it is written. And if the law itself includes a punishment which is unreasonable for the crime, then why in the hell haven't we changed the law? And it points to one of the things that I have always found the most problematic within the so-called American justice system. I call it a legal system because I don't think we get the justice part all the time.
Right.
And that is the fact that prosecutors layer up charges.
Yes.
To effectively extort pleas from people. That was a topic in Mr. Dietrich's article. And so if the penalties that Hunter Biden was not or that we thought was inappropriate for Hunter because it was just this one crime, then why are those the penalties that that accompany these crimes under the federal criminal code? We got to look at that.
Absolutely. But I'm going to walk this back and look at it two different ways. One, please. I'm going to start with looking at it as a father. So, you know, Joe Biden as a father has been through a lot. You know, he lost his wife, lost his daughter, lost his son. And now here's another son who he perceives, rightly or wrongly, depending on your opinion, perceives is being hounded only because he's Joe Biden's son. So from that perspective, as a father, and having been a father for a long time now, I know that I want my children to bear the consequences of their actions. But they have to be fair consequences. They have to be realistic consequences.
But this is where the question about the penalties comes in. That's the way the law is written. Why isn't that presumptively a fair penalty, regardless of how it's charged in other instances?
Because I will say that Joe Biden had no faith that the penalties that were going to be issued later this month would have been fair. And mainly because he's Joe Biden's son.
But this is my question, Tom. The penalties are circumscribed by federal law. If the penalties that are circumscribed and set forward in federal law are not fair
there's a tremendous amount of leeway in those penalties, right? So that's one way. That's the first way.
But isn't a response to that a question? So what? Yep, there's leeway. Right. He did the crime. He subjects himself to that full range of penalty.
Right. But he already had a plea agreement, and that plea agreement
was rejected by the judge because that is our process. Why does Hunter Biden get a get out of jail free card when other people don't?
Right. So I'm going to look at it as a father.
Which I grant you that as a dad, of course, right?
Any parent would protect his son at all costs. As far as the consequences from a fairness standpoint, he had already paid back the taxes he owed with interest and penalties. He had already done that. And, you know, how many people have applied for a gun who weren't legally able to apply for a gun and would have gotten sanctioned for it? I mean, there's a whole bunch of people who have been sanctioned,
doesn't make absolving Hunter of any responsibility the right outcome, does it?
Right. I'm not saying it makes it right or not. But the second part of this, and this is the world that we live in today, and I'm not sure that all Democrats understand the world that we live in today, that this Trump administration is going to go after people. They are going to go after people, and they're going to charge people with whatever they can charge him, whether it's based on reality or not, whether it's based on anything, they're going after people.
Doesn't that make what Joe Biden just did in pardoning his son all the more dangerous and destructive? Because what he's saying is, I do not trust the system to do right by my son.
I do not trust the Trump administration. I trust the system. If it wasn't the Trump administration coming, and this is the reality of the new world that we live in.
But there's an Article 3 judge, Tom. I'm going to push you on this. There's an Article 3 judge that has to sign off on whatever those penalties are. He could have commuted the sentence, right? He could have more narrowly crafted the pardon.
There's a Supreme Court that believes in the rule of law and that the president doesn't have immunity for everything, but that's not Hunter Biden's case. You've already got so many different things out there that say this is not going to be a fair administration coming forward. And Joe Biden, as a father, said, I'm not going to submit my son's life to this. If they want to come after me, if they want to come after my administration, that's fair game. But I'm not going to expose my son any longer to this.
But he didn't expose his son. Hunter exposed himself. He made those decisions, right? This was not Joe Biden. Hunter not violated these laws.
I understand what you're saying, but I'm saying as a father, he said, I'm no longer going to expose myself. You can agree or disagree with it on the legal matter, but I'm saying as a father, he said enough is enough.
Well, and I totally agree with that. I completely understand the impetus. Yep. And though I would never be strong enough to not pardon my child in a similar circumstance, I think it is perfectly legitimate for us to require these ultimate sacrifices by people we call President of the United States.
Yes, as but not unfair, their but not their family.
But he this wasn't a malicious prosecution. He did these things. In fact, it was Joe Biden's DOJ that prosecuted him. If we're going to look at him like this, right?
I mean, but once again, we're talking levels here. And the level of his crimes do not rise to the level that the Republicans have been saying they're going after him for.
But that's not what these cases were about, right? These cases were about admitted criminal conduct and a jury that convicted him of criminal conduct. And the thing that concerns me, right, is this perception that Americans have on both ends of the political spectrum.
There's the point. Right.
Right.
There's the point.
The system isn't fair. And they're right.
And they're not right. They are not right.
What do you mean? There are rules for rich elites. Come on, Tom. There are rules for rich elites, and then there's rules for the rest of us.
How many people have Trump named that he's already pardoned for previous crimes?
Kushner, right? Who else do we have? I mean,
Roger Stone, right?
I don't think they have official roles yet, but
he's going to be wandering around the halls of the White House, right?
But he also didn't issue a blanket 10-year pardon for Charles Kushner. He issued,
he knew the Democrats were going to come after him. He knew
but
that.
But do you burn? But I think you end up on a slippery slope where at the time at the very moment we need people to stand up and defend the institutions, and the man told us.
But let's defend them in a way
times.
that protects. And I think Joe Biden has earned it. I think he has earned the right to protect his family. I think he has earned the right to protect his remaining son.
Well, he legally has the right.
Yes.
Earned? Deserve?
Earned. Yes.
Where do the rest of us regular people who aren't rich elites get the protection that we so richly deserve?
If we're just the regular
our debate's going to continue.
Justice.
I'm sorry to talk over your time. We got to take care of business.
Oh, no, it's fantastic. Yep.
We're going to come right back, y'all. You can get in on this debate. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. It's probably one of the most interesting questions of our time. It is worthy of your thoughts. So give us a call, 855-75-CIVIC. Keep it locked. We'll be right back. In a fat man's back, said open up the safe, put your money in a sack, tied his hands behind him and put a blindfold on his eyes.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, y'all. It is the last segment of this Friday Eve episode of the Maggie Dawn Show. You got Dom Salvia coming up next. You're not going to want to miss my little buddy. He's always good for your drive home from work or whatever you might be doing on this sunny but very cold Thursday afternoon. My special guest co-host, a very patient man indeed. His name's Tom Paulswitz. We're debating the Joe Biden pardon. I'm con. Tom's pro. Tom, you had a couple other thoughts, and I'm going to try to keep my mouth shut so you can get them out of your mouth. And then we're going to go to the phones.
Two more things. I think presidents have a long history of protecting family. I mean, you can go down the list of people that presidents have pardoned who are family members over the years. But one of the things I read was that Democrats were upset because Joe Biden had promised that he wasn't going to pardon Hunter Biden. And I look at that and I look at that promise and go, that promise had no impact on the election. That promise had no impact on the outcome of the transition. That promise had no impact on any bill. It wasn't as if he promised to remove nuclear weapons from Europe or promised to bring peace to the Middle East. That wasn't the promise. The promise was I wasn't going to do it, and he has a right to change his mind on that. And he has a right, after being petitioned, to pardon who he chooses to pardon. So I think it's important, and I don't believe this is a slippery slope. I mean, you literally have to commit some crimes and then figure out how to get your parent elected president so that you can get pardoned, right? That's not a slippery slope. It's not an event that's going to happen on a regular basis. So this is a one-off thing, and I think as Democrats, we have to understand that these one-off things, they don't mean that we've given up the moral high ground. What they mean is there are nuances to it, and you have to understand the nuances, and you have to understand if anyone was harmed by it. And at least to me in this situation, no one was harmed.
I'll just say this. I feel harmed by it. I defended Joe Biden. I am an institutionalist. I believe in norms, and I believe that our defense of norms and institutions cannot be situational. It also cannot be transactional. I know that Donald Trump is going to abuse the powers of the executive branch of government, but there will come the day after Donald Trump is no longer president. And while he may never bear any consequences for his criminality and his cravenness and his corruption, other Republicans will have to answer for it and explain it. And I think this does put a quiver in their sheath that they can use, or at least a shield to try to deflect. Is it disingenuous? Hell yes.
And I completely disagree, because they have already decided they would make up more egregious things anyways. So it doesn't matter what actually happens. That goes
why isn't that a race to the bottom in some way? Tom and I could go on forever, but we want to hear from you. And I know you all are sick of me talking. 855-757-4842. Let's go to the phones. Jesse from Madison, what do you have to say?
Well, I think this is another case where the Democrats got it wrong, or in this case, a Democrat got it wrong. Something that was on paper, okay, I think from an ethical standpoint, pardoning his son. But again, the real politic of it is, like you said, people on both ends of the spectrum see this as an unfair legal system where, you know, it makes a Democrat come off as an elitist. The right way to do this would have been to pardon all nonviolent drug offenders across the country, because what I also like to defend institutions and norms. But what's legal and what's institutional and what's a norm is not always ethical or moral. And we have a very serious problem with incarcerating people who doesn't serve society to lock them up. On the other concern about slippery slope and wondering, okay, well, now if he were to do something like that, is that just going to, spur Trump to, pardon all the January 6th rioters? We can't behave worrying about what Republicans are going to do, because newsflash, Trump's going to do that anyway.
Yes.
Yep. He will.
He's going to do what he's going to do.
But again, there's a day that comes after that, and precedent does matter. We still talk about the Clinton pardon of his brother-in-law. These things come up. It matters.
So Maggie,
there's an
on that
arc
note,
of
did,
history. Yep.
Right. Did Joe Biden pardon Hunter Biden because Trump pardoned Charles Kushner?
No, Tom, but the overarching arguments about the use of presidential powers to preference their family or their closest loyalists is relevant. Cam from Appleton, you're up next. What do you have to say? Say hello to Tom.
Hey, Tom. Hey, Maggie. I wanted to try to make this as quick as possible because I know there's limited time. But first, I don't think that you can be, and this is a blanket you can't be picky and choosy with what to follow or embrace when it comes to law. Law, at the very root, is your argument, but law is also what provides and that we follow the powers of the president's pardon ability, whether it's morally right or wrong. And then on top of that, we can't chastise Biden for changing his mind on this.
Yeah, I got to jump in there. If Joe Biden had said humbly, I got it wrong and I've changed my mind, I might not be quite as ticked off about it, but he didn't say that in his statement. He didn't apologize for lying or getting it wrong before. He just said, this
is merited. But he didn't lie, Maggie. He changed his mind.
Then why didn't he say that?
He did.
He didn't say that. No, he did not say the words, I've changed my mind and I'm sorry I made that misrepresentation.
What difference does it make if he said it or not?
It makes a lot of difference. Last caller, you got the last shot at it. Jim from Brookfield, what do you have to say?
Well, Tom and Maggie, I have to say I agree with Tom, because Trump was elected and he was going to go after Hunter Biden again. If you think it was going to end with just the conviction that he's got on record, they were going to go after him with more of a vengeance and try to dig up things and go after him. So the fact that Trump got, in.
And we'll have to leave it there. So sorry, Jim. My thanks to you, Tom. I always like a nice debate in the afternoon. I'll stand up for you, Tom. I'll hope you stand up for me. But it's always better when we stand together, even in disagreement.
Absolutely.
That's going to do it for me. Dom Salvi is up next right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.